Hello, I'm Kyle Willoughby. Joining me is Claire White.
Hello.
And this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Man. We're here to discuss new nerd creations, how they were made, and explore the roots of the characters and the stories. Today we're talking about the comic Paper Girls. It is the Eisner Award-winning Best New Series from Brian K. Vaughan and Cliff Chang. Brian K. Vaughan is the author, Cliff Chang is the artist, and it follows the adventures of four paper girls, newspaper delivery girls, who meet up in the wee hours of the morn on November 1st. Weird adventures follow. The comic starts in a Cleveland suburb, and it's set in the year 1988. The first issue of Paper Girls was released in October at New York Comic Con in 2015, and the second trade came out November 30th of 2016, this past year. Claire will be covering production, and Claire, what will you be talking about?
I'll be talking about the creators and kind of what they were going for with this comic, the themes that they were trying to evoke.
That's going to be very interesting because Brian K. Vaughan is a freaking legend as far as creators go. I'm going to be talking about the themes of Paper Girls, or at least the theme singular that it really evoked in me and what I think it's kind of about. Because it's hard to get a grasp on this comic.
Right. We're two trades in, which is a collection of, single comic issues.
Yeah.
And we both said we're not 100% sure what this comic is about yet.
Exactly where it's going.
Yeah. It's not to say it's bad. It just hasn't been made clear yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to say, Claire, it's good to have you back in this closet
because
we missed
Kyle.
You last week.
Oh, I miss being here. I enjoyed the episode, though, and I was so happy I didn't have to do it. I've never played Final Fantasy.
I'm sure James was happy to do it for you.
I heard it was a good time.
It was very interesting. All right, so let me launch into Paper Girls. So this comic is a funny thing for me. It's hard to pinpoint themes or historical relative topics to its story, partly because we're only 10 issues in, and partly because this story is so bizarre and filled with twists and turns that I'm not sure exactly what it's about yet, or like where it's going, like we mentioned before. All I can do is make vague inferences into possible themes that may be rendered unrelated with the publication of the next 10 issues. You know, because like you're like, oh, I think it's going for this, but this story is so full of twists and turns, you can't really be sure where it's going,
right.
I don't think. What I am going to talk about with Paper Girls is the big feeling that it gives to me, and apparently a lot of other reviewers and critics as well, if you read any like recommendations for Paper Girls online. And that feeling is nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. No, that is a big part of this comic. And even if it doesn't stay nostalgic, I feel like it starts off in 1988 and it is a time jumpy comic.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't stay there, there's that element of nostalgia because those characters are still in different pieces of time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And it gets compared to Stranger Things a lot, the mm-hmm. Netflix show. I don't know that they're that related. I don't think.
No, they're just about kids. On bikes
on
in
bikes.
The 80s.
Yeah, which we did an episode on. So let me start with the history of nostalgia, because that's really what this comic evokes in me. Nostalgia is a relatively new word, but it comes from the combination of two ancient Greek words, nostos, or homecoming, and algos, or pain.
Oh, so homecoming pain?
Homecoming pain, yes, is what nostalgia literally means.
That's so fitting. That's so right.
Nostalgia was coined by the Swiss physician Johann Hofer in 1688, and it was not a word used to describe the lighthearted, proverbial walk down memory lane, quote-unquote, but was actually labeled as a disease. Nostalgia was a disease you could get.
Ooh, tell that to, like, the TV producers right now.
Tell that to anyone right now, right? Yeah.
TV, you are a disease.
You're a disease, man. The disease was similar to paranoia, except you were not manic with thoughts of the non-existent persecution of someone above you, but you were manic with the longing for an object, place, or time.
Oh, that just sounds like escapism.
Apparently, escapism was created by the Swiss. Don't forget it.
In 1688?
Yes.
Didn't exist before then?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. You can thank the Swiss. So Hofer may have coined the term nostalgia, but it did seem to exist before that. So during the 30 Years' War, the Spanish came up with the disease El Mal de Corazón, which roughly translated means evil heart. And the disease became associated with Swiss soldiers, particularly, and caused at least six of them to be discharged from the army.
For doing what?
For they had come down with a case of the nostalgias, and they needed to be sent home because they longed for home so much they were manic.
Is this PTSD?
It doesn't say, it doesn't compare it to PTSD. What they say is that the Swiss were apparently more susceptible to it than everyone else.
They had just such fantastic imaginations?
Maybe, or maybe they were fighting in a foreign land and they just wanted to be home.
Because Switzerland is so much better than Spain?
Switzerland maybe is so much better than Spain.
They'd be so upset.
Well, the Swiss were apparently so susceptible to it that the playing of certain Swiss folk songs became punishable by death in Spain because they needed to keep their Swiss soldiers and they didn't want them coming down with the nostalgias.
I mean, I guess if you were fighting a war that you didn't believe in and it was just for the money and it was horrible, yeah, I'd get nostalgic.
You'd want to go back home.
Yeah. New York City looks so good right now.
Yeah, it would be so great. So doctors of the late 1600s and early 1700s were trying to compile a list of culprits, potential culprits for nostalgia, you know, what caused the disease nostalgia. And it's a pretty funny list. I don't have everything listed here, but I wrote down some of my favorites. One of them is a lenient education could cause nostalgia. Masturbation also could cause nostalgia.
I mean, I think all these things can cause nostalgia.
Eating unusual food can cause nostalgia. If you're in a foreign land and you're eating their food, it's going to make you nostalgic.
Yeah, definitely.
Being from the mountains.
Definitely.
Just people who are from the mountains miss their mountain homes whenever they're not there.
I'm not from the mountains, but I was in the mountains and I am nostalgic for the mountains.
Exactly. And my favorite one, love, specifically the happy kind. And it actually was listed, the happy kind of love.
No, I think these doctors were on to something. They knew what they were talking about.
I just can't believe love. The happy kind.
What's the unhappy kind?
I don't know. That's another, like, what is the definition of love in the late 1600s? Because that's pretty confusing. Another thing about the nostalgia disease, or another trademark to it, is it was also more potent or present in the fall, in the autumn season.
Mm.
Which you see, I feel like you see when you're thinking of the nostalgic shows and stuff that we love now, a lot of them are set in the fall. Stranger Things is set in the fall. Paper Girls, what we're talking about right now, is set in the fall. I mean, not that this is something maybe we love, but Transformers, which is definitely playing on our nostalgia, at least that first movie was set in the fall as well. And the doctors thought this might be the case because a lot of these soldiers would be fighting in foreign lands in the fall, and they thought maybe that the soldiers are thinking of their own mortality, and they're in these foreign lands, and they're watching the leaves turn brown, and they're like, I want to go home. I don't want to die here.
I mean, it's actually really similar. I get nostalgic in the fall because I hate the cold.
Mm,
and I think it might kill me.
Nostalgic for summer.
So I'm nostalgic for the summer. I'm kidding.
You're like, it's killing everything around me.
And it will kill me.
Next.
And I'm not supposed to be in this cold.
So the search for the nostalgia disease got pretty crazy. And doctors even were looking for the pathological bone that existed in a person's body that caused diseases like nostalgia.
Did they do weird operations on people and take out bones?
Not to my knowledge. I didn't read anything about that, but
yeah.
I could see it. I don't think that's...
Those Swiss.
That's not that far out of the realms of possibilities. Eventually, nostalgia moved away from being a disease and into the realm of psychology and the workings of the mind. The modern-day version of nostalgia is a little bit different, and here's where I'm going to change gears and talk about nostalgia right now, because I don't know, maybe it's just me, but nostalgia is running
the entertainment industry right now.
It certainly is.
Kind of why we have this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. There's a lot of our topics on here, you could be put in the nostalgia category, and it's not just big here, it's big in the Western world. If I was reading a bunch of Guardian articles about it, mm-hmm. how it's a huge thing in England right now. So I'm going to talk about the philosopher Svetlana Boehm. She was born in Russia, but she's also the professor of Slavic and comparative literature at Harvard University, and she actually has a lot of published papers about nostalgia. So Svetlana Boehm defines nostalgia as a longing for a home that no longer exists or has never existed. Nostalgia is a sense of loss and displacement, but it is also a romance with one's own fantasy. So the nostalgia that we see more and more of seems to be a yearning for a place or thing, but is in fact a yearning for a time, like the time of our childhood, and the slower rhythm that we as adults remember our youth being, you know, when we were kids.
I don't even think it's just our youth. Like, I think I don't even know if it's as much now as it used to be. I always thought growing up there was this longing for the 50s in America when things were good.
Yeah.
And it wasn't... It was the idea of the 50s, because it almost felt like the people who were longing for it had never lived in the, or were weren't really around in the 50s.
Yeah, it was our parents who were maybe born in the 50s but didn't really remember it. As far as Paper Girls go, Brian K. Vaughan is writing about his youth, like, in the 80s, and that's the nostalgia that we're seeing in this. And that's the nostalgia that we also see in the other 80s set, like, shows and films, like Stranger Things as being the big example. So our mind also has a habit of glossing over the stresses and hardships of being a kid. Like, when we think about these memories of ourselves as children in that nostalgic way, we only remember the good times. We don't remember that maybe we were stressed because we were going to flunk a test and that, like, that felt like the world at that time. Just like as an adult, we're stressed now because, you know, we got to make rent, we have bills or whatever, we have responsibilities. We think like, oh, as a kid, I didn't have any responsibilities, but things still meant something as a kid, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that at all. I remember it being pretty bad as a kid.
Oh, really, Claire? You don't have much nostalgia for your past, your own childhood?
The thing is, I do have really wonderful memories of playing as a kid and just how great that was. And
yeah,
it was really fun. But I do remember the bad, maybe because the bad stuck out so much to me. But I remember not getting along with people at school, feeling like I didn't fit in, feeling that I was weird.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. I remember that, too.
I see. My childhood memories are mostly good. Like, I do remember the bad stuff, but I also remember the bad stuff with, like, a good filter, like a fun filter. And when, like, this nostalgia thing of the 1980s of kids riding around neighborhoods on bikes, I was barely born in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not something that I should really, like, feel akin to. But when I read this stuff, when I watch Stranger Things, when I read Paper Girls, I do. Because, like, my life in, like, a small town in Western Maryland in the 90s was sort of similar. We were riding our bikes all over the neighborhood, getting into trouble and running around in the woods and goofing off.
See, I'm from California and there's hills everywhere, the San Francisco Bay Area. Riding bikes was really hard.
I know I don't have a lot of time, but were you a latchkey kid? Or we could talk about this at the end, actually. we'll talk about this at the end. So the heavy eras of nostalgia, let's get back to nostalgia. The heavy eras of nostalgia in recent history also seem to coincide with tumultuous kind of revolutions of the time. Like during the Industrial Revolution in England and America, the fantasies of King Arthur were at their most popular at that time. And even like something like The Wizard of Oz, which is this very whimsical tale, was written in 1900 as America was undergoing all these industrial changes. And Wizard of Oz enjoyed massive commercial success. And this tidal wave of nostalgia that kind of coincides with the tumultuous revolutions, according to Boyum, is caused by people's need for stability. Like, it was easy and comforting to live in the stable, nostalgic past of King Arthur and the morals.
In the 1950s?
In our case now, the 1950s, than it was to, like, face what's going on, than all the changes that are going on in our time now. So all the nostalgia that's hitting us right now, you could make the argument that it's accredited to the digital revolution. You know, that perhaps that's where today's wave of nostalgia is coming from. It's our response to complexity and ever-accelerating technology of our digital age. And thinking back to the 80s or the 50s or wherever grants us that stability that we kind of yearn for.
I mean, the world feels so tumultuous right now, not just with the digital revolution, but just with everything.
Yeah.
I can totally see why we need to latch on to something that feels comforting and safe.
Yeah. And that's kind of where my segment comes back to Paper Girls. It's hard to talk about this comic too much without giving away spoilers because the story really gets going right away. But I believe this comic is Vaughn exploring his own nostalgic feelings and for his childhood. And at times, I think he's taken pot shots at our modern obsession with nostalgia right now. There's some lines in that comic that, to me, are like shots fired across the bow against, like, against the modern nostalgia industry and making money off of that.
Oh, it totally is.
But at the same time, it does feel,
it is nostalgic. Yeah. And in a good way, too.
Yeah, it is. It still feels...
In a good way. That's a bad way to say
authentic.
It. Yeah, in a way that there is a yearning for this fun time when we're riding around on these bikes with our chosen weapon. And we're delivering the news, and the news is... Newspapers are about to die anyway.
Yeah. And it does feel authentic while at the same time poking fun and questioning our own modern nostalgia obsession. And so that's my segment, Claire. I would love to hear more about Vaughn because I'm wondering if what you're going to tell me about his creating this comic is what I thought he was kind of going for.
I think I am going to tell you that. So I'm going to start off real fast going through the creators Brian K. Vaughan, I feel like I always say this, but we could do a podcast, multiple podcasts on Brian K. Vaughan. He is one of the top comic book writers right now.
One of the best storytellers and baldest men I've ever seen.
Both of those. Just some of the things he's worked on. X-Men, Ultimate X-Men, Captain America, Doctor Strange, The Oath, which we talked about in our Doctor Strange podcast,
yep.
And it is regarded as one of the best Doctor Strange comics ever written.
Yep.
Runaways, Spider-Man, Batman, Young Justice, Swamp Thing, Pride of Baghdad, Ex Machina, The Last Man, Saga, which is largely considered the best comic being written right now.
People love Saga.
You guys love Saga. I love it so much. And James, our producer, loves Saga. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. He's also worked in TV, most notably on Lost. He worked on seasons 3 through 5 as a writer, executive story editor, and producer. And some people credit him with making Lost good for those seasons.
Really?
I actually stopped Lost. I think at the beginning of season 3 is where they lost me.
That's where they lost you. So punny.
But I know, I'm so good. I have a podcast. But anyway, I read some articles saying, like, he saved Lost seasons 3 through 5, and when he leaves, you can tell.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. He's won multiple Eisner Awards, which we talked about it earlier. It's basically the Oscars, Pulitzers for comics.
Yeah.
The first one being for Ex Machina, and basically every year he just seems to get one for Saga.
Yeah.
Not saying it's not deserved. But if you look at his list of Eisner Awards, it's like Saga, 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 Saga.
I've been meaning to read Saga, and one of the first comics that I remember reading that wasn't like a superhero that I knew was Runaways, and it was given to me by my brother. And later in life, finding out that's Vaughn.
That's Vaughn. Like, I need to read Runaways.
Sense. It's cool.
Cliff Chang, who is the artist, he started off as an editor at DC Comics. And these are just a few of them. He's done more. He illustrated Green Arrow / Black Canary. That was his first one. He's done Batman. He's done Nightwing, Supergirl, and Wonder Woman are some of the titles he's worked on. Matt Wilson is the colorist. He has worked on Wonder Woman with Cliff Chang. He also worked on Swamp Thing, Young Avengers, and he worked on The Wicked and Divine, which we did a podcast for. And the colors in that are some of the best things in that comic.
Yes. The Matt Wilson, you doing the colors in Wicked Divine gives you so much comic book street cred in my mind. and the colors in Paper Girls also I really love. I like the art, but to me the colors are what really brings out, you know, the story from those pages.
It's funny because when I found out that he did the color for Wicked and Divine, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense.
It does.
This comic is beautiful. And Jared K. Fletcher is the letterist. He's been working in comics for ages. He started working for Archie Comics on Zen Intergalactic Ninja. He's worked on so many titles, just a few of them. X-Men, Spider-Gwen, Wonder Woman, Thanos, Luke Cage, Hellbreak. And he worked on Ex Machina with Brian K. Vaughan. Oh, and I said Wonder Woman. That was with Cliff Chang and Matt Wilson. So the team is coming over from Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Paper Girls itself was announced in January 2015 at Image Expo in San Francisco. Vaughn and Chang said that they've actually been trying to work together for 15 years.
Oh, damn.
They met working on Swamp Thing. And it was one of the first things Chang ever drew for, and it was when Vaughn's career was really starting to take off. And apparently they just haven't been able to match up their schedule since, like, someone's always working on another project or something's going on.
Yeah.
And when Wonder Woman, which is the most recent project then that Chang had been doing, was winding down, Vaughn approached him about Paper Girls. And Chang has said that he knew once he read it, like Vaughn's like little outline of it,
yeah,
that if anyone else drew it, and he would pick it apart. And that's how he knew he had to do it. He was hooked.
It's cool seeing all these people like that they've all had worked together in the past coming together for like one super comic.
Yeah, no, it really is. Both of them have kids, speaking of nostalgia, and they said that they're interested in how different it is to grow up in 2016 than it was when they grew up in the 80s, and how different it will be for their children.
Yeah.
And this idea for Paper Girls came from Vaughn's childhood, growing up around Cleveland, where the comic takes place, when people got their news from kids on bikes, and apparently he was actually a paper boy. And all these characters are 12. There's 4 main girls. They're all 12. And Vaughn believes, I don't completely agree with this, but when you get to 12, that's when you know what you're going to be into for the rest of your life. Or, like, what you're into at age 12 is what you'll be into. And this is also very personal for him because 12 is when he knew he wanted to do comics. He said that's when he also first read Watchmen.
Well, and he actually achieved his dream. What I wanted to do when I was 12, I have not achieved.
What did you
want
to do?
Close. I wanted to write fantasy books.
You could get there. You'll get there, Kyle. No, but people are on different trajectories.
That's true.
You have a podcast about fantasy books.
That's
like the
true.
First step. Also, he said when he was 12, just for how his lifespan, for the trajectory of his life, it's like when it seemed that all of the paper boys were replaced by paper girls. It was just this thing that happened. And he remembers them as young entrepreneurs who would deliver news and then shake down the clients for money.
And which there is a fair amount of in the first couple issues of mm-hmm. Paper Girls.
And actually, my best friend was a paper girl. And so by association, I was a paper girl. Because if I wanted to spend the night, or if we wanted to hang out all night, I had to wake up with her in the morning and deliver the papers.
I'm so jealous of that, Claire.
Oh, it was horrible. You had to wake up really early. And then when we were hanging out during the day, sometimes we would go collect money from people.
I have romanticized the act of being a paper
boy. But it wasn't on a bike because, like I said, California Hills. It was her dad driving us, and we would throw it from the back seat of the car.
That's the people who delivered newspapers in my neighborhood also were in a station wagon, and they mm-hmm. had a guy sitting in the back of the station wagon, the back open, and someone driving, and they would just toss them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't romantic. I think she'll tell you that, too. And so anyway, back to Brian Vaughn. He grew up with a lot of female friends, apparently, and he wanted to write about girl protagonists that were not defined by their relationships to the male characters, which he does in this. The girls in Paper Girls, they care about making money. They care about being independent, and they care about their friends. They do not care about boys. They barely mention boys.
Yeah,
like, just boys are jerks, kind
boys
of.
Boys are jerks show up in the beginning, and then you don't really see them again.
Yeah, and they don't care about sex. They're 12. 12-year-old girls not caring about sex. And it doesn't define their life and their decisions. And he says when he did Runaways at Marvel, and for those who don't know, it's about a bunch of teens who find out that their parents are supervillains.
Yep.
Kyle's read it. I haven't. And
it's
so they team up together and they kind of fight the evil
are. They run away, and it's good. It's really well done, and it also takes some twists and turns, but it's cool.
I do really want to read it. But what happened was that it was a teen book that had more females than males in it, and at Marvel, where he was writing it, it was a huge controversy.
Really? I don't even remember noticing it.
But he's working for Image Comics now. That's the publisher of Paper Girls. And he said he can do whatever he wants, and he can write about a group of girls, and he doesn't have to defend or explain it. I mean, he is explaining it.
Yeah.
But he can just do what he wants.
Exactly. He doesn't have to stick to, like, you know, you're writing a Spider-Man comic, so it needs to be these sorts of things.
Or Marvel, the boss says that this needs to be this way. Vaughn and Chang call Paper Girls Stand By Me meets War of the Worlds. And Vaughn has said he wanted to emulate the vibe, so nostalgic, of Stand By Me, which was the first R-rated movie he saw in theaters at 10. And the reason he liked it was that they were real kids, and they swore, and they smoked like the kids he knew.
Yeah, Stand By Me was a movie based off of Stephen King. I think it was a novella. I don't even think it was a novel. It was very short.
Speaking of nostalgia, he feels like there are a lot of rose-tinted glasses when it comes to the 80s. I mean, he was specifically talking about the 80s, but that there was a lot of darkness and a lot of sadness there. I mean, in the first issue of this comic, one of the main paper girls who you like uses a homophobic slur just off the cuff.
Because that's how kids talked.
Yeah, I mean, that's how kids talked in my school, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't, Vaughn says he didn't want it to be like the PC kids of now. And he wanted to be honest about that time period and not sugarcoat it.
Yeah, it definitely feels authentic to me.
And he also said, I liked this too, Paper Girls is written for kids, but that he didn't want to dumb it down. He said, you know, when he was 12, he was reading Watchmen. And he wasn't interested at 12 at reading kids' books. He wanted to read the best.
Yeah, you want to read what's cool.
So he wrote this with like 12-year-olds in mind, but it's written for kids. He says 12 to 82. But it's true. When I was 12, I wanted to read Tolkien.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to, you don't want to be reading Dr. Seuss when you're 12 years old.
No. Like teen books are kind of lame. Yeah. You're like, I want to read the adult stuff.
You're hungry for something more mature.
Yeah.
Because you just want to grow up.
And then this actually made me feel a lot better because I always get nervous about these comics that start off really cool and then maybe they can't continue it. But this comic, like we said, it plays with time travel and fourth dimensional rules. So the creators said they had to plan ahead because you can't like do this stuff and not have a plan for it. And Vaughn says he never goes into a story unless he knows how it's going to end.
Yeah, I watched an interview where he said that too and I was like, ah, Vaughn.
I know.
Okay, Vaughn, you're the man.
Because I feel like so many in comics, it just happens so often. And this is a lot with DC and Marvel because they just have these ongoing series.
Yeah, they have the never-ending universe.
It's just hard to... The quality especially, I feel like, suffers.
Yeah, it goes up and down. It definitely does.
And also, I enjoyed this as well. Vaughn says that comics are the greatest medium because they have an unlimited budget.
Yeah.
If you want to throw a dinosaur and some time travel, no studio is going to say to you, or no producer is going to say, we don't have the budget for that.
We don't have the budget to be able to draw pterodactyls.
So he thinks with comics, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And another really cool thing is that this is a creator-owned piece. So the four creators own this comic.
Yeah, they get the proceeds. I imagine Image gets some of them.
Mm-hmm. Image gets some of it, but...
But the Image has no say as to what they do with it, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm. They get to determine when it comes out, how many issues.
And where the story goes.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And we will probably talk more about Image in other episodes because they have so many cool comics
right
now.
We're actually doing an Image comic in our next episode called Monstrous.
If you want to get ahead.
Yeah.
And a few quick stats. In November 2016, Paper Girls Volume 2 was the number one seller for graphic novels.
And I believe it because I had a very hard time finding Paper Girls Volume 2.
I did too. And the girl at the comic book shop told me she was sold out because of Christmas. Everyone's getting their kid Paper Girls for Christmas, which is a great gift.
Actually, that's a good thing. That's a great gift.
Yeah.
Keep doing it, guys.
And in 2016, Paper Girls, you mentioned, won the Eisner Award for Best New Series.
Certainly did.
Brian K. Vaughan just continues taking all the Eisners. And it's actually Image's third best-selling comic behind The Walking Dead and Brian K. Vaughan's other comic, Saga.
Yeah, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
So, Kyle, did you enjoy Paper Girls? Does it live up to the hype?
I do really enjoy Paper Girls. I'm so curious as to where it's going. And I think it's impressive how much I enjoy it with how little information they've given you.
Yeah.
Because they haven't given you much.
Mm-hmm. I think Vaughn is just such a good writer. I mean, and the art is amazing. Cliff Chang is great. The coloring, like we said, is amazing. But just the writing is so creative. And I feel like it has that, like... Brian K. Vaughan timestamp of like, oh, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm surprised again.
Definitely, definitely. And it is one of the most interesting comics I've ever read as far as like where this story is going. It's so twisty and turny. And it really is hard to talk about without spoilers. We're not going to spoil it, but it does get going very quickly.
You were talking about how we read it in the trades.
Yeah, we read it in the volumes.
We weren't getting it every month as it was coming out.
I can't imagine having to read it as single issues every month.
I think I'm going to have to reread the first two trades when the third one comes out because it's just so many weird twists and turns.
Yeah, it is a little confusing.
Also, we talked about doing Paper Girls because it was so hyped and you go on any kind of like comic blog and everyone's talking about it. I was kind of hesitant because it was four men creators writing about four girls. And I was pleasantly shocked at just how good the girl characters are.
Yeah.
And if you had told me that they were women writers, I would have been like, yeah, these are women writers, definitely. Yeah. Or people who understand girls.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, that is a weird thing when you think about it, that this is a comic about four 12-year-old girls and it's written by four, 40-year-old men. but in the end, it's like if the stories are good and the characters are good and they feel authentic. And I don't know what it was like to be a 12-year-old girl, but I believe these characters. And then, and they're not being exploitative. And I think it's just a cool story.
And I also think it gives credit's the wrong word, but I think there's a big thing with writers. Like, I can't write what I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you can write what you can explore what you don't know. And I know it's a fine line because you can do it poorly and you can offend a lot of people. But on the other hand, I do think it's really cool that these guys, they could have just written about boys, but they didn't. They wrote about girls, and it's exploring this new perspective or different perspective for them. And it's really cool.
Yeah, it is. I remember watching a Q&A with Neil Gaiman, who's a fantasy author, and someone asked him how he writes women so well, because this person said they had trouble writing women, and Neil Gaiman was like, well, do you have any friends that are women? Do you know any women closely? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, well, there you go.
And one more really quick thing. Going off what you were talking about, nostalgia, and how, you know, Vaughn was saying he didn't want those rose-tinted glasses, I love that. Especially as I get older, and I remember thinking that the 50s were this idyllic, perfect time in America. And then you get older and you're like, oh, what about like women's rights and civil rights and all these horrible things that were happening in the 50s that were just under the surface? And
the
you
threat of the commies.
In the commies. But just that, like, as you – I do sometimes resent culture for just making this – ideal time period, these nostalgic ideas of the past.
So, yeah.
And I think that's why I like Game of Thrones so much, because it's not nostalgic for like this medieval era. Like, it sucks.
You don't want to be in Westeros. One of the articles I was reading about nostalgia mentions that, and I believe it was one of the articles written by Boyum, she mentions that in the past, people had this idyllic utopian vision of the future, that's what the future is going to be. Mm. And that right now, we have this idyllic utopian vision of the past.
Mm.
And I thought that was a funny thing, just the juxtaposition of that.
Well, we need people like Vaughn to break that idea.
Yeah, and he does. He pays like kind of an homage to the 80s, but it doesn't feel like he's using it as a cash grab. I felt the same way about Stranger Things.
I think Stranger Things actually played a little bit more towards nostalgia. I feel like it didn't highlight the bad parts of the 80s as much as Paper Girls does.
I guess when I think of the big nostalgia culprits that I don't like, it's the shows that use the nostalgia and the setting as a huge part of like the narrative, like heavy lifting, which I don't think Stranger Things did, and I don't think Paper Girls does either.
But right, something, it's just there.
It's just there, yeah. It's more of a set piece. Than
like an exploration, but it's not about, the story is not about the 80s.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I see what you're saying.
So, Paper Girls, if you guys like comics, you should read it. If you don't like comics, you should read it.
No, it's a good starter comic too.
Yeah,
if you want to just try a comic that's really fun and cool.
Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And I'm Claire White.
And we are Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, A Nerd Manual. Feel free to contact us on our website at dsrapodcast.com. And we would love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes. And we would love it like we love nostalgia.
Do we love nostalgia?
It's complicated. You can find the show on Twitter at dsrapodcast. I can be found on Twitter at klex303.
I can be found at Along With Claire, that's C-L-A-I-R-E.
And you can find our producer James at James Fowey Jr., that's James Fowey, F-O-U-H-E-Y-J-R. You can learn more about nostalgia and Paper Girls, two really cool things, on our Facebook page where we're going to post some of our show notes. Our producer, who when he was 12 had megalomaniacal dreams of ruling the world, is James Fowey. Our logo is done by Patty Hyland, and I'm pretty sure the 12-year-old Patty Hyland really wanted to design a logo for, like, a really cool podcast.
Yeah, I think she told me that.
I think she told me that, too. And our theme was composed by Pete Rowan, who I know as a 12-year-old just wanted to sit in a basement and play D&D all day. Once again, this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, A Nerd Manual. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.